we're catching up.
Well, good afternoon. We are waiting on one more FAB member to walk through the door, and we'll have an official quorum at that point. But I do want to acknowledge Rob and Tom that are on the phone currently, and unless there's someone else on the phone, we'll go ahead and start with you. I'm sorry, who was that?
Brian Brand has been waiting diligently here.
All right, thank you, Brian. We have an official quorum, so...
This is Jeremy Bradshaw.
Okay, thank you, Jeremy.
And Saj.
Okay, thank you, Saj. We appreciate you taking the time today. So we'll officially call the meeting to order. I would like to open up a public comment. Any public that would like to speak in regards to today's agenda, please step up to the podium. Seeing none and hearing none, we'll move on to item number three. Adoption of the April 25th Facility Advisory Board meeting agenda. Can I get...
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Very good. Moving on to item number four is our consent agenda, and on our consent agenda is the January 24th, 2017 Facility Advisory Board. And hopefully you all had a time to review that, and if there's any changes or comments, please let the committee know, but I would like to have a motion to approve the prior meeting minutes.
Move to accept.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Great, thank you. Next, we're going to move to item number five, receive and discuss legislative updates with Dr. Michael Johnson and Bill Welsh. And Bill and I had chatted previous to this meeting, and obviously we all know that Bill Welsh, president of the Nevada Hospital Association, is very busy with several items, but he did provide a nice four-page document on bills that have either not moved on or have died, or in the process of moving through the House and the Senate and their respective committees. So would anyone like to discuss any of the particular items? I know the provider fee, I think, impacts all the facilities in the room, and that continues to be a negotiation as we speak with the state. Also, we're all very interested in the grading system that's been proposed for hospitals to be graded related to regulatory compliance. And anyone in the room or on the phone want to talk about any particular item that may impact the entire majority of the group?
Did anything happen with the governor's bill about giving people license more swiftly? There was talk that he was putting forth a bill, but I haven't seen anything or heard anything about it. Has there been anything?
SB 69.
Hmm?
SB 69?
Yep, page 2.
License by endorsement?
Yes.
So let's, page 2 on the executive summary.
So it's still in process.
So it looks like it's in discussion.
Those looked at it, they amended and passed it out of the first committee.
They what?
Amended and passed it out of the first committee. I didn't have a chance to read the amendment, so.
Okay.
So it sounds like it's moving forward. Again, I think we've all had some really good conversations related to the grading system that the state's proposing, and I think we, at least the position of the Nevada Hospital Association, we think that there's already enough grading out there related to the STAR system and LeapFrog and
health grades.
Health grades and Joint Commission, and so I think we've done a nice job of positioning the association on our stance with the state. So. And then, Dr. Johnson, any particular legislative items that the Southern Nevada Health District is tracking and monitoring?
Sure. There's a few. Well, there's a number that we track weekly, of course, but five in particular that major bills that we're really looking at. And I don't know if this is in your packet or not. Was this included in your packet?
May not be.
Okay. We can certainly give this to you. Assembly Bill 269, which has to do with taxation on vapor products. by Assemblywoman Bustamante Adams. This bill passed the Assembly Taxation. It's on its way to the Ways and Means Committee. It does introduce a new tax, which, you know, may limit its chances this session. So we're kind of watching this one to see where it goes. It's essentially a bill that imposes a tax on 5 cents per fluid milliliter of a consumable product. So liquid nicotine, essentially, for vapor products. Second bill that we're particularly interested in is Senate Bill 151, Senator Menendez's bill, which authorizes the District Board of Health in a county whose population is 700,000 or more to establish, equip, and maintain a public health laboratory. So that would be an independent public health laboratory here in the South. Now, as you know, we have the Southern Nevada Public Health Lab system, which is actually part of my division. But we are essentially an extension of the state lab up north, so this would allow us to basically function as an independent lab, and which would allow us to be a lot more efficient in both our testing and responsiveness to the needs of Southern Nevada. Right now, many of our specimens are shipped up north for analysis and so on, so there's a lot of, I think, inefficiencies. And this wouldn't impact the general fund, but it would allow us to be able to pursue funding independently as well. So we're closely watching this one. This did pass the Senate 19-2. It was referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services. So, and Dr. Iser has testified on this already. We've been talking with Senator Woodhouse. The funding for the trauma system, that's that bill has basically been referred to an interim study. So it's kind of on hold right now. I don't know, John, if you have anything to add to that.
No, it's still on hold, and they're amending the language as well.
Okay. So that's another one that certainly has implications for us. I mean, these kinds of bills, if this was to pass and there was funding for our trauma system, it would allow us to free up some general funds, which we could do a lot of other important things with. So, not to mention the, you know, the authority and function that would come with that bill. Senate Bill 165, Modenus's bill, which defines obesity as a chronic disease and requires school districts to do height and weight measurements, BMI measurements on youth. We're in support of that. I've testified a couple of times on that. Passed the Senate 16-5, and it's on its way to Health and Human Services. We're working closely with Clark County School District and the State Division of Public and Behavioral Health, should this pass, to determine the appropriate sample sizes for students needed. So that one's in the works. And then,
Johnson, on that particular bill, is there any action once students are identified as categorized as obese? Is there going to be action on the Southern Nevada Health District on actually doing something about that, or it's just more for tracking and data collection?
Right now, it would be, as the bill stands, it's really for data collection. But we do a lot of work currently in collaboration. In fact, we fund Clark County School District through some of our pitch grant activities. So we work very closely with them. So we would be able to. That's one of the main programs within my Office of Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion is obesity prevention. So we work closely with them. So we're very much in support of that. And finally, Assembly Bill 474, is on behalf of the governor. This bill requires certain persons to report drug overdose or suspected drug overdose, essentially to SMHD, to the health district. We have a number of reportable diseases that are reported here in my Office of Epidemiology and Disease Surveillance. This would add drug overdose reporting as well. It would require additional resources and the information to actually gauge the impact drug overdoses are having in Nevada would be part of what this bill is trying to get at. So that's something we're watching closely. It's with the Assembly Health and Human Services and it was amended, and they recommended passing as amended. So would that particular bill have hospitals and urgent cares and other things alike actually report that to your division? So that would be a requirement?
Exactly.
A time frame within so many hours or days?
I'm not sure. I'd have to revisit the bill. I'm not that familiar with it.
Because obviously we would be all impacted regardless of your... Clearly. So, right. Okay. So that was 474, that one.
That's Assembly Bill 474.
Yeah.
And those are the major ones that we're looking at right now as we continue to...
Any questions? Other questions? Any questions for Dr. Johnson related to legislative updates? Okay, seeing that that was more informational, we'll move on to receive and discuss an update on the Nevada Trauma Registry, and Dr. Johnson's going to speak to us about that as well.
Sure. Just to put this in context for you who may have not have been around through this process, SNHD offered to assume control of the state trauma registry as it hasn't been functional for a long time. John's office in particular, there hadn't been a really an actionable trauma registry report for essentially 12 years, and a lot of the information that we were getting was incomplete. So we made an offer essentially to the Department of Public and Behavioral Health that and developed a web application for a trauma registry here. We did a number of you, I think, participate in some of the demonstrations that we did for stakeholders. There were two stakeholder meetings, one last November and one earlier this year, to sort of walk people through it. There was also consensus from stakeholders that the departments sought, and bottom line was they felt that it was in the best interest of the stakeholders that they keep it at the state. So you have that letter in your packet. That's what they decided to do. We are working closely with them now to make sure that we get all the data that we need in order to have be able to make actionable decisions. For example, when other hospitals come and apply for level 3 trauma status and so on. John, I don't know if you want to add anything.
Recently I requested from the state trauma registrar a data set indicating transfer times from EMS to a particular non-trauma center hospital within the county. And they sent me the data. They were very quick with it. However, the data was remarkably incomplete. Some facilities are less than 50% compliant with entering that particular data field, which is required. I asked Tabitha at the state just to verify that there was EMS data that I requested, and that's what she gave me. So there was a compliance issue for required data fields before that. So if you just take that back to your groups and your data registrars, I know it's a piece of work that they have to do in the non-trauma centers to get this information, but to have a functional system with actionable data, I need to have all the data there. So not just that particular field, but there may have been other fields as well. It was very narrow the focus that I had there. So if you could just please take that back to your folks.
Very good. Thank you. And seeing that was more informational as well, and again, everyone has the letter from the state of Nevada related to the trauma registry. Moving on to item number 3, receive and discuss an update and demonstration from the Clark County Antibiogram Program.
I'd like to have Zoran take a few minutes to demonstrate the antibiogram that we just recently completed and share that with you and entertain any questions you might have.
I'm going to briefly talk about Clark County's 2016 antibiogram. Antibiogram provides an overall profile of organisms' susceptibility to a panel of antibiotics. And here is an example of antibiogram generally looks like this. And the reason we need to have an antibiogram is because of the problem of antibiotic resistance. It's been a growing problem in the United States and in the world. According to CDC, in the United States, at least 2 million people became infected with bacteria that are resistant to antibiotics each year, and at least 23,000 people die as a direct result of these infections. Antibiogram can provide a guide to clinicians and pharmacists in selecting the best and paired treatment of antibiotics while waiting for the test result of microbiology culture and susceptibility test. And a lot of communities are conducting their own antibiotic resistance surveillance program to monitor the pattern in their community. And in Clark County, we created a county-wide antibiogram as part of our battle to fight this problem in our community. And the other thing I want to mention is the antimicrobial stewardship program. As we all know, Joint Commission has made antimicrobial stewardship standard. They made that become effective on January 1st this year for all the hospitals and nursing care facilities. And one of the requirements for the education of the staff is to provide the antibiogram to the surveyor. So we can see it's very important. And here I'm going to demonstrate our online version of Clark County antibiogram. You can either Google this or you can go to some Nevada Health District website directly to look at the antibiogram. This is the home page of Clark County antibiogram. We created this antibiogram based on the patient-level data collected from UMC, North Vista Hospital, and all the hospitals in Valley Health System, and plus Quest Diagnostics. There are 2 ways of looking at this antibiogram. Either it's in one page, by looking, if you click here, you're going to see the one page view, or you can look at by the organisms. On the left, we have an expandable list of organisms under inpatient data and outpatient. So for example, under inpatient, there are also gram positive and gram negative. So if you click on that, it will expand to give you all the organism that's included in our antibiogram. For example, this is Staphylococcus aureus. If you click on that, it will show you the individual antibiogram of staph, and it gave you the, it did not come up. Let me try again. Okay, here it is. This is the antibiogram for staph or Staphylococcus aureus, and give you the percentage of susceptibility for any type of antibiotics including this panel, and also the number of isolates that's tested. If you want to look at one specific antibiotics, you can type in the first few letters. For example, if you want to see Cipro, so you just type Cipro, it will come up. It's right here, Cipro is the susceptibility and the number of isolates being tested. And anytime we want to go back to the home page, just click on the back to list our organisms. It will take you back to this home page. And here I want to demonstrate the one page view of antibiogram. Again, we separate that into inpatient and outpatient. And under each category, we also have 2 views of antibiogram. One is with IC numbers being tested, and the other one is without. Let me click on the one without the IC number. Okay, so this is the antibiogram. You can see on the top at the panel antibiotics, and on the left at the organisms, and in the middle at the percentage of susceptibility of each organism corresponding to the antibiotics being tested. As you probably noticed, there are three color scenes in this anti-biogram. One is green, that means the susceptibility is 90% or higher. If it's orange, that would be between 60 to 89%. When it's red, that's less than 60%, so that's really of concern for us. When it's blank, that means either this testing is not appropriate for the particular organism, or maybe we did not have the test result for that, or the number of isolates were less than 30. Because it was less than 30, the result tend not to be very valid, so we're not including that result in this antibiogram. Okay, so this will complete my presentation.
Great. Very good information, and with those of you on the phone, it is a pretty slick, intuitive product, so I would encourage, hopefully we can link this maybe perhaps in our own intranet sites to the Southern Nevada Health District for our medical staffs and pharmacy departments as well.
Is it? Sure.
Oh, sure, we absolutely can do it.
Can we make a note of that?
Yeah. We'll just very nice work.
I also want to mention that we're also looking into the possibility to develop a mobile app for this, so in that way all the providers can click on that in their smartphone.
And this data is only pertinent to Clark County, is that correct?
Right, this okay. is only for Clark County, but we also have data on Knight County, so our next antibiogram will include Knight County's data, and also when we receive additional data, we will update this antibiogram. This one is only for 2016, and as I mentioned, it's only including 8 hospitals and 1 commercial lab. And we're working on to get other hospitals on board, so when we get more data, this will change.
Great, thank you.
Just a question, too. This is, we've been on a little bit of a hiatus, correct, on the antibiogram. When was the last time we actually had current data?
Mm-hmm. Last time we developed antibiogram back in 2009. Based on data we collected from 2005 to 2007.
Okay.
Right, so yeah. We haven't done that for a while. We just started this again.
It's been a lengthy hiatus.
That's good.
Well, it's a good product.
Yeah. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Okay, seeing that was more informational, we'll move on to agenda item number 6, Chief Health Officer Report. Dr. Johnson's going to give that on behalf of Dr. Iser.
Sure. The first thing I'd like to do is, actually I'd like to,
oh, I'm sorry, I have
got to do the your nomination.
Yes.
Okay. I did, unfortunately, skip by agenda item number 4, and item 5 is it's that time of year to receive and review, consider nominations for the Southern Nevada Health District Facilities Advisory Board officers, which are the chair and vice chair, to take appropriate action. We do have a couple of volunteers. I have volunteered to serve another term, but if someone else would like to nominate someone else, certainly open to that as well. Also, Rob from Summerlin has been nominated for vice chair, and also Todd Sklandberg for vice chair. So I'll open it up to discussion on the chair and the vice chair. If there's anyone else on the phone that would like to make a nomination or volunteer, just let us know. Okay. Anyone want to take these in order here? We will need to take a vote on the chair for Mason Van Howling as the chair of the Facilities Advisory Board. And I'll ask for a nomination or a...
So moved. Nominate.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, everyone. And now we do have a vice chair. We have 2 nominees, Rob and Todd. So any discussion on that? I will need to take a nomination between one of the two, so both have volunteered. So Rob, do you want to have any comments since you're on the phone? I know Todd's not here, unfortunately, but any dialogue related to the vice chair?
I'm just happy to serve in that capacity again, but if the group would like to shift that up or change that, that's fine as well.
I'll nominate Rob.
Okay. We do have
Second.
Okay. Okay, we have a nomination for Rob, but who was that on the phone that seconded that?
Ryan.
Ryan?
Yep.
Okay, thank you, Ryan. All in favor for Rob?
Aye.
All right, thank you, and the motion passes. Thank you, Rob, and thank you, Todd, for also volunteering.
Thank you.
Okay. Agenda item number five, now receive a chief health officer report.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Jones. Thank you. Just three quick items. The first is the county health rankings report, and I'd like to ask Richie to come on up. Just to take a few minutes just to walk you through this, but on March 29th, we had an event here where some of you may have been present, where we released the county health, annual county health rankings for the healthiest and least healthiest counties in Nevada. And it's actually a very nice report and allows us to kind of slice and dice data by numerous indicators by county, as well as compare by county in other states and similar counties. So you can kind of get lost in it when you start. People warn me of that, and as you start kind of playing around with this and looking at things, like I was looking at Maricopa County, Arizona, compared to Clark County, and so, you know, whatever sort of things you think of, it's actually can be very useful data. So I might just ask Rishi to take a couple minutes to put it in context and walk you through this.
Okay. Thank you. So the background is that this was established in 2010 by the University of Wisconsin and the Robert Wood Johnson Department of Population Health. They have been doing rankings for 50 states and over 3,000 counties since then. And the main objective is to raise awareness about health and emphasize that health varies from one place to another. Okay, so this is a rankings model, and basically population-based data is collected from a number of different sources, such as the CDC and different surveillance systems by the U.S. Department of Education, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and then they released those county health rankings. This year it was released in March of 2017. That attracts media attention, and then community members come together to discuss the rankings, and evidence-based policies are developed to affect these different health factors, which would ultimately improve the health of our community. So the health rankings are based on two sets of factors. The first is health outcomes, and that represents where we are today, and then the health factors, which represents where our county could be in the next few years. And this is a conceptual model of population health that shows how they're weighted. So health outcomes is based on the length of life. That tells us whether people are dying before the age of 75 in our community, premature mortality, and the quality of life, which is the perceived physical and mental health functioning of people in our community. And then the health factors represent these four blue boxes right here, which is health behaviors, and that represents these different factors: diet and exercise, alcohol, etc., clinical care, whether people are insured in our community or not, social and economic factors, which includes the unemployment rate in our community, and then the physical environment, which includes whether our sidewalks are safe to walk on, etc. So it's all based on that, and then this orange box, which is policies and programs, and that also affects the health of our community. So this is the health outcomes, and this shows where these different counties ranked. And you can see that Lincoln County, which is highlighted right here in the red circle, was first for health outcomes. And 17th was Mineral County right here. One thing to keep in mind is that all of these counties have different population sizes, and Mineral County, for example, is only 790 residents, whereas Clark County, we have about 2 million residents. And so we have to keep those different things in consideration. And then also this map right here reflects health factors, and you can see that Douglas County ranked number one for health factors. Last year they also ranked number one for health outcomes, so it did change a bit. And Mineral County is number 17, Clark is number 12. Okay, this website shows where you can get the data from, so I'm just going to click on it, and you scroll down and you click on the state you're interested in, go to Nevada, And you can see these maps are right here, and if you hover over each of them, these counties, usually it has the ranking on there, but you can go to rankings. Okay, and it's taking a while to load up. Just wait for a minute. But if you click on that overall ranking, for health factors, for example, I showed those four blue boxes. So for example, you want to know about the obesity rate in Clark County and see how we rank compared to the other counties. You can do that by hovering over these different counties once this rankings comes out.
You might just click on Clark County. Sometimes that seems to be a little faster. Sometimes.
No, that's just zooming in. Okay, well, another thing you can do is you click on downloads, and you can download this Nevada summary report, and this has all the data in it, and it also explains the different measures that are used for these factors. You can see this graph is interesting as well. This shows that the health of our community is not only impacted by people that are in public health or in the medical community, but it includes people from all of the different sectors, such as business, education, etc. So that's important in developing these policies, that we have members engage different areas.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Let's see, next we have on April 12th, we also hosted another event here, actually a major press event for the release of our needle exchange program here. And actually, I didn't know that Marlon was going to be here, but I might actually ask Marlon to come up, who's my manager of the Office of Epidemiology and Disease Surveillance. And it was really these vending machines you see over here, you may have seen, we actually got a lot of national media coverage from this event. But these vending machines will supply clean needles and syringes. And actually, you may want to come up and talk about it, but the creative design of these machines, as well as the security of these machines, as well as the leadership of this needle exchange effort, Marla really deserves the credit for that, and she can describe some of the community partners we've worked with. Our needle exchange programs are, as you probably are aware, a model of public health program, but this is, as far as we know, we're the first state in the country to actually have to utilize vending machines to in needle exchange efforts. And again, the philosophy behind it is to reduce infection, sharing needles and reduce infection, as well as provide opportunities for counseling and treatment and so on for people who actually come in to exchange needles. So I might have Marlo say a few words.
So this is a project that I've been working on for the latter part of the year. We have our first storefront here in Clark County called Track B, and it's a program we've designed collaboratively. It's a model where these vending machines will not only dispense clean needles, but actual wound care products, safer sex products, and eventually we're looking at Narcan for overdose prevention as well. There's only three machines, so we're doing a pilot project. They're going to be put in drug and alcohol treatment, mental health facilities, and it's a model that is working right now because we're treating these drug and alcohol facilities, or excuse me, providing education to these drug and alcohol treatment facilities around HIV testing and education. So we've gotten a lion's share of people on board with actually doing the testing in their facilities, and that way, when they're working with the population, they have also the vending machines available. It's a harm reduction model, so it's just making it accessible, and that if a person's not really not interested in treatment right now. They're going to a facility where treatment is available should they need it. These machines will be moved out in the next 2 weeks. AFAN and Community Counseling Center is where we're going to start them. We have a third one that will be moving probably to the Gay and Lesbian Center. We're kind of still negotiating that, and then we'll be watching them for a period of time. They are very innovative machines. They actually talk to a cell phone, so they will let you know when the product is low. They can be set up to track population around the community to see where people are accessing them, and so we're building that surveillance system now to be able to talk to the machines so they really literally can talk to our phones. So that's just a little bit about them.
And users, I believe, of these machines will have an 8-digit code?
So they'll either have a code or a card that they can use, and they'll be able to limit product, because in Nevada you have to collect dirty for clean. There's actually laws around it, so there's a process by which we will create unique identifiers and then be able to follow the population.
I will share anecdotally that at the press event, who's the lady that demonstrated the machine?
Chelsea Cheatham.
Chelsea Cheatham, who tracked B, got a slid her card in, punched her code in to demonstrate the machine. And the machines were loaded with the kits. And true to vending machine form, you know, the thing moved up right on the edge. Right, the slot the machine.
It's one of those things you do not want to happen, but it works.
What that kid. Yeah. So. Larry, anyway. So when all done, after you finish your trial, how many do you hope to deploy in Clark County?
We would like to be able to, we don't have a hard number with that. We're going to base it on how people access it. Mm-hmm. But if we see that people are starting to access the machines, and we're working with the population right now through a coalition. We're developing a street level coalition with the actual population, and they will drive somewhere where this is going to be set up. We know that we've already been asked by Henderson and Boulder City and some other places that are interested in machines. They're not cheap. They run about $7,000 a piece because of their technical capability, and we have to, budget is always an issue. We're going to have to kind of tether that with a little bit about funding. But we are looking for grants and donations through private industry to see if we can't get some additional resources to buy them. So,
yeah.
So how are you managing the repository for dirty?
So the Track B has funding set aside to be able to collect dirty and be able to dispose of it. But it's really Track B and NAERS, who's Dr. Jerry Cade. He's part of this process, so they are able to put small dollars aside to be able to dispose of them, much like we do through biohazard. We are looking for sustainability because that is a problem. But I am aware that Metro and some other organizations are looking at bringing in huge autoclaves into this community for other reasons, and we're looking at tying into those facilities to be able to dispose.
So it'll be a one-for-one, but it won't be in the same location?
It'll be a one-for-one in the same location.
Mm-hmm.
And there's money set aside for right now to be able to take those as biohazard, but we know that that's a problem, and we're going to have to address it.
Is the machine actually alert, since it's so sophisticated, you that it's filling up, or does it have to be checked?
No, it alerts me when it's being used, and when our product is running low so that we can go and fill it back up.
Okay.
Very nice. So we'll look forward to hearing more about it as it's deployed.
Thank you.
Yeah, as Marla mentioned, it's clearly a pilot project, so we're looking to try to position ourselves for, full-blown study and more funding. So I guess the last thing on CHO report is our Zika birth defects update.
I was telling Mason just before the meeting, it's sort of a give us and take us away kind of thing. We had applied for a Zika grant. We actually got a letter to serve as a bona fide agent for the state of Nevada, which is rare, and we were able to apply directly for a Zika birth defects related grant, which was a 5-year grant that we were awarded for $200,000 a year for 5 years, so $1 million total grant. The focus really was on Zika-related birth defect surveillance, and education of doctors and pregnant women and referral to services. We just recently were awarded this just a couple of months ago, that the award. We really, in year one, we only had 5 months to spend the first $200,000. Last week, a couple of my staff were at the CDC in Atlanta for an annual ELC meeting, and the CDC announced that all Zika funding is in jeopardy coming July, which would include this award. There are a handful of other states that are actually in year two, if you will, or, you know, have really a full year behind them, so they've done a lot more than we've been able to do in just a couple of months in setting up this kind of a surveillance system registry. The CDC did ask them if they would continue to implement this gratis. We have not received any official notification yet from the CDC that we will not get the award for year two. In fact, we submitted just a week ago our year two budget, so that was the word. But so that's not the news we wanted to hear. We'll keep you posted on how that rolls out. But it's unfortunate. Dr. Iser and I were talking about this the other day. I mean, it really is unfortunate as Zika is really beginning to ramp up, here in the U.S. with, certainly Florida last season and Texas, and now, you know, we're concerned down here and that something like this would happen. So we'll keep you posted.
Okay, moving on to agenda item number 7 is really open time set aside to talk about any emerging issues that the committee may have, and a lot of time to talk about any items that you would like to see for the next meeting related to education or any other projects that the we're working on at the Southern Nevada Health District. So I'll open it up to any dialogue or conversations that anyone wants to have on the phone or in person.
I know I'll just speak on behalf of the University Medical Center. We're teed up to have a Joint Commission survey very soon, so I don't know if other hospitals, there's a new survey tool, a new algorithm, and I know we're all impacted by that, and so I didn't know if anyone wanted to comment on their experience that they can share just broadly with the group, or anyone's had a survey this year that they would like to give their colleagues and sister facilities a heads up?
Well, I haven't had a survey this year, but the last 2 years I worked with facilities that were surveyed. It is significantly different than any survey I've ever had, because Joint Commission and CMS are now in tandem. Mm-hmm. There isn't one without the other. In the past, you could have passed Joint Commission and got your Joint Commission to still have not passed the CMS portion. And now that is not so. If you don't pass the CMS part, you don't pass the Joint Commission part. It was the first time that there was a significant difference between what the surveyor said when they walked out of the facility. You know how they usually give you an exit and they tell you, we think you're going to have this many, you know, sightings or condition levels. And, it was reviewed differently and came back like more than twice what they said they had once it was reviewed in the Home Office of Joint Commission. So it is significantly different. I'm jumping my hoops.
I will say we just recently hired a group to do a mock TJC. And
well,
Good deal, which is good. Because we got a lot of really good feedback on some of the things, and they're very much in tune with what the new standards are, and just hammered those home for us. So I know that our staff, and we're probably going to be surveyed sometime before the end of this year, this calendar year. So we're going to have an opportunity. It cost a bit. I think it was about $25,000 to bring the team in, but I think it was definitely going to be worth it in the end, because this is not just about getting accredited, but about providing better quality care. So the team is really looking hard at some of the findings that they had. Also, my colleague Peggy Kearns just went through hers in December, so you know, hot off the press, but it was before the new standards were published, so a little bit dated from what we're looking at right now. But I think only goodness can come from transparency and sharing information across the board. So I'm happy to actually share what we had on our mock survey. If anybody's interested, let me know, and our team is going to be working on those things, but they are based on the new standards.
Well said, Colonel. Anyone on the phone that wants to comment? Okay, well, I think that will take us to item number 8, which is public comment. I'll set aside for matters that were not on the agenda, and seeing none and hearing none, I'll ask for a motion for adjournment.
Also moved.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for on the phone in person. Have a great day.
Thank you all. Good mission.
Thanks.
Good mission.